Hi, welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. And in today's special episode, Canadian Customs Duty. I'm Jim Day, and I'm joined today by Maureen Guilfoy, Director, and Sebastian Drozdowicz, Senior Manager, both from Ryan's Canadian Customs Duty practice. And first of all, Maureen and Sebastian, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you,
Thank
Jim.
you.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Jim.
The pleasure is ours. I wanted to invite you onto the podcast to talk about a couple of really important changes in Canadian customs. And these changes look like they have the potential to have a major impact on certain Canadian importers. So I wanted to get your thoughts on them, and maybe we can talk a little bit about that potential impact and why, importers should really pay attention to what's going on. Let's start maybe with the recently proposed changes to how the value for duty will be calculated in certain situations. Maureen, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So this was a proposed legislation that basically slid underneath the radar of many. What Customs wants to do with this is that they're actually looking at using the last sale. So whatever triggered that import into Canada, and what they're saying, what CDSA is saying, is that they want everybody to be on the same level, the same playing field. They want e-commerce businesses, non-resident importers. But what's going to happen is this legislation will actually affect Canadian resident importers. And the main thing that they're looking at doing is they want to change the definition of sold for export to Canada. They want to change who the purchaser in Canada is. So this change in the legislation will increase the value for duty, therefore increasing the duties and the taxes. And ultimately, it's going to affect the consumer at the end of the day.
So the driving force behind these changes then is really to eliminate any kind of competitive advantage that a non-resident importer might have over a Canadian importer. Is that correct?
Exactly. That's exactly it. Absolutely.
What you're
But however,
saying,
it's going to affect
right.
the
Okay,
resident
yeah.
importer as well.
Well, that's a really
Yes.
important point. So even though that's the intent, the fact is there are Canadian importers that will be affected by this change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the frightening thing is when we look at importers, Canadian importers, they have multiple models out throughout. So for example, if they're importing, a truckload of goods in, it's not always the same item, it's not always the same destination. It could have, multiple. It could be going to a distributor, it could be going to an end consumer, or it could be actually going to the warehouse just to refill their inventory. So if we look at one container load, that's just one example coming in. How is an importer going to be able to break down all of those different end uses, for example? And that's really going to affect the value for duty. It's going to affect their software, what they use at the time. It's going to be quite the problem, actually.
So, in addition to potentially higher duty on something that's being imported, because they're going to, I guess, clarify which price has to be used in determining the value for duty, it sounds like there's also on the horizon more difficult compliance requirements.
Absolutely, yes. So, and here's another kind of an interesting item too, is that we've had a lot of Canadian International Trade Tribunal cases that have looked at valuation that have set a precedent for valuation. If these regulations are changed, ultimately it's going to overturn some of those court cases, the Mattel case especially, that's going to happen. And I had the privilege of listening to a panel of lawyers, trade lawyers, talk about this proposed change. And some of the words that came out, they were mystified. They were just so confused at how this could even happen. And I think one of the main things that was mentioned was throughout these proposed changes that the finance wasn't even brought into the discussion for this. So it looks like just agency individuals are looking at these changes and not considering what the final situation or how it could be affected.
It does sound like a bit of a rush, from
Yes.
the Canada Border Services Agency, or often we call it CBSA side of things. I guess they're trying to resolve this inequity that they perceive exists, but by rushing, it sounds like they may be creating other problems for importers
Yeah,
down the road. So very
absolutely.
interesting. Sebastian, anything to add?
On the valuation itself, I think Maureen kind of nailed it all, you know, with touching on all the non-compliance that could potentially be brought based on the proposed regulation. So, no, I think Maureen's got this one.
And I just wondered, Maureen, would it be possible maybe to give us an example of how this new duty calculation might work and what the impacts might
Absolutely.
be coming across the border?
Absolutely. So if we think about, let's just think about, first of all, even a Canadian resident importer who's importing items. So we could think about anything. If you think about anything that's customized, for example, so, you know, whether it be golf equipment, golf clubs, whether it be furniture, you know, as a consumer, we can go into perhaps a furniture store. We can think about, you know, the style of a sofa that we want, the fabric that we want, and then we're going to purchase that item. That company imports truckloads of furniture, basically, but it's our purchase, it's our order that triggered the import of those goods. So technically, if we look at the legislation, customs wants the importer, that now that Canadian resident importer of sofas, to use that value that I'm purchasing that from, not the related party transaction. And even, you know, if they have a transfer price study and they've always used, you know, the transaction value, now customs is looking at they want this consumer price to be used. And we can look at multiple items and especially custom items. I think this would really come into play. But anything where a consumer is reaching out to order an item before it's imported, that's basically the best way to sum it up.
Yeah, very interesting. So, I mean, obviously, a lot of work for the importer to properly comply with that new calculation because they're going to have to, you know, figure out what the consumer's paying instead of using what they actually paid for the goods. But how about on the CBSA side? Like, isn't this going to be really difficult to enforce?
Perhaps that's one would think. Exactly. This is, I think that word mystified comes to mind. How are they going to monitor this? I mean, it's been said that obviously they're going to be looking into not just strictly purchase orders. When they do an audit right now, they do a deep dive into, you know, computer systems they can look at. They can look at, you know, the purchase orders, obviously, but now they could look at emails that were received to place an order for an item. There's just we don't. I think it has us all baffled, to be quite honest, how this is actually going to play out, and is it going to play out? There's mixed feelings. If basically we're told in some instances that we might see it go through as early as we thought September, maybe October, or there's been such an outcry because obviously a lot of associations have got together, they've put in their concerns. We were told that something was going to be sent actually to Chrystia Freeland, the Minister of Finance, about their concerns too. And so who knows, maybe it'll actually get squashed too. So I think we'd all be happy to see that.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, Maureen. I mean, they are quiet on the implementation date. They had expressed an intention to bring it in fairly quickly. Obviously, 1 month would not be enough time for any importer to prepare. But
No.
even early next year might be difficult. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that negotiation process plays out and you know, what the final provisions look like and when they're going to be implemented. But certainly
Absolutely.
something for Canadian importers to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. And the one thing to mention too, if it does come into effect, it will not be retroactive. So we'll be looking at that going forward, the changes in the valuations.
Well, at least that's something because I know when it comes to customs duty and tax, retroactive legislation is not much appreciated. And as you mentioned, it would potentially cause a lot of problems with previous case law
Absolutely.
in terms of decisions that have been made at the tribunal.
Absolutely, exactly.
Now, if all of that wasn't enough, you know, I guess the CBSA is currently in the process of implementing a major systems change. And of course, I'm talking about the CARM project. Sebastian, maybe start by telling us what CARM stands for.
Thanks, Jim. Absolutely. So yeah, let's take a step back and let the listeners know what CARM is, right? So CARM is a multi-phase project initiated by CBSA that will change how the government collects duties and taxes. Through CARM, CBSA will modernize and streamline the accounting process, as well as provide the importers the right tools to self-serve using this online platform. So that's basically what CARM is. It's really just an accounting software platform for import community, the brokers, trade community to utilize and use for import activity. So as mentioned, it is a multi-phase project. Release one was launched in May of 2021. And basically that gave the importers and exporters the ability to set up the online access and have a very basic visibility to their account, meaning they can pull up their accounts, they can view how much duties and taxes they owe at the end of the month, have there been any credits available for them to offset the payments and such. Release 2 was planned for October 2023. However, the implementation date has now been moved to May 2024. It's a lovely government. You know, they all like to kind of, you know, work on their own speed, if you want to call it that way, right?
Yeah, so, the government tends to follow their own timeline. That's is that what you're trying to say, Sebastian?
That's exactly what I was trying to say. Thank you, Jim.
That's for sure. And I appreciate you letting us know where the project is at. So they're currently, I guess, release one or stage one is complete, and they're looking at or they're working on putting in stage two. And what I gather is that was going to come in this fall, but they've deferred that, giving everyone a little bit more time to deal with release two. What's the implication of release two being fully implemented? Like, what would an importer have to worry about with that coming into effect?
So the delay basically was made to allow the import community or give them a little bit more time to test their internal software, internal systems, and basically there's quite a bit of importers still out there that do not have access to CARM or have not taken the appropriate steps to access the CARM portal, basically have the release basically not have access to the CARM portal, if you want to call it that way.
So basically you're saying that once that system's fully implemented, really, you won't be able to sign up for like an importer or an exporter account without using the new system, right? You won't be able to do it the old way any further.
That's correct.
And and the broker, right? The broker's not going to be able to remit the duty and the taxes on behalf of the importer. The importer is going to be 100% responsible. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the hesitations is with the importing community as well, is they have to get a bond, because obviously they've relied on the broker, right, for the payment of the duty and the taxes. So now they're going to have to get a bond. They have to set up this CARM portal. They're going to have to go in, pick out their account on the 25th of every month, see how much they owe, and then they will be able to remit those monies to online. And I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing. I think for importers right now are responsible for all of the data that the broker is doing on their behalf. This will give them a little bit more visibility to what's happening every month. They can go into their portal. They can take a close look. Plus, they're going to be responsible for those duties and taxes. We have seen in the past where brokers, not very often, luckily, but there has been where a broker has gone bankrupt. But before they shut the door, they collected monies from their clients, but they did not remit it to the government. Therefore, the importer is still responsible to remit those monies, even though the importer paid it to the broker. So this is a little bit more visibility, a little bit more control, and I don't think it's going to be a bad thing. I think we're just a little bit, obviously, whenever we have change, where it's just we're not sure where this is going to go. And even for us as a consulting firm, it'll be different for us as well, because we're going to have to go into these portals too and do a lot of our work. So it'll be all new for everyone, for sure.
It's definitely going to be a little bit challenging for everyone, but I think with the right approach and everybody working together, we should be fine, right? So
yes. Yeah.
I mean, a couple of really good points there. I think it sounds like in the long run, you know, modernizing The import duty collection payment system should be a good thing for everyone involved. And we are talking about one of the government departments that was the last to move away from using actual paper for all their transactions. So it's definitely a step forward, but I guess some legitimate short-term concerns as everybody tries to get ready. And I thought you made a very good point about it's not just the importers themselves that have to worry about this, but their consultants and people working for them on those imports would also have to get familiar with the new system.
Yes.
So, yeah, really good information. Obviously, lots going on for importers with respect to Canadian customs right now. But I wanted to ask you both about one more topic, and this is not a change at all. It's actually something that has existed for a long time, but it is something that's often forgotten when it comes to Canadian imports, and that's duty drawbacks. Maybe first of all, you know, for someone who's just hearing that term for the first time, maybe let them know, you know, what exactly is a duty drawback?
So duty drawback is actually a refund of customs duties paid on imported merchandise that were subsequently exported. So as an example, I can, let's use a textile importer. A jacket is imported into Canada, and then that jacket is sold to foreign customer or is re-exported. Now, duties paid on that imported jacket may be refunded by Canada Customs. So basically, you import something, and if that merchandise gets exported, you have the right to file for duty drawback. Now, there are different types of duty drawbacks that importers can take advantage of.
So, I was going to ask you, can you give us a couple of examples? I mean, obviously, different situations would lead to the item being exported after having been imported.
Yeah, exactly. So like I mentioned, there are different types of duty drawback that are applicable for an importer. One would be a manufacturer drawback. Second one would be same condition drawback. And a third one would be obsolete or rejected merchandise drawback. So maybe I can share some examples here. So as a manufacturer drawback, it's basically a refund of duties paid on imported raw material or components used to develop or produce a finished good. For example, let's go back to our jackets. I import a zipper. I make a jacket. That zipper goes into the manufacturer of that jacket. Now that jacket gets exported or sold to a foreign consumer. I have the right to claim duty on that zipper, okay? Same condition drawback. It really is goods coming in the same condition and goods are exported in the same condition. Jacket comes in from China, same condition, that jacket gets exported. Boom, you have the right to claim your duty.
Go ahead, Sebastian.
No, that's okay. Go ahead, Jim. Sorry.
I was just going to ask you, who has the right to claim that drawback? Is it the original importer into Canada? Or is it somebody else further down the supply chain?
So whoever paid the duties and taxes, so that would be the importer.
And you can, there is actually a little where you could transfer that right to that, the exporter. So for example, if I'm the importer of record, I import the raw materials, I sell them to a domestic manufacturer, they manufacture something, then export it. We would have to transfer the rights. So we'd have to complete a form, provide them with the B3s. But the problem with that is a lot of importers don't want to share the cost, what was involved, the pricing.
Right. Yeah. You would be revealing your markup basically.
Absolutely.
If you did that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's tricky. Okay. But it is done. It is done. And sorry, Sebastian, you were going to talk about the obsolete one as well.
Yeah. The obsolete or rejected merchandise drawback. It's basically a refund of duties paid on imported merchandise when the goods go beyond their life shelf. So that would maybe apply to food products or incorrect order. So let's say I've ordered 10 jackets in black and I got 10 in red. That's not what I ordered. It was a mistake. So now I'm going to ship those back to the vendor, the supplier, and I have the right to claim those duties.
Okay. And go ahead, Maureen.
No, and I was just going to say, and also, you know, just to when we've got items like Sebastian had mentioned in our warehouse that have, you know, especially food products, for example, that have come out of date, you know, pharmaceutical goods, any of those type of items. And it's going to be too expensive to send it back to the supplier, nor do they want them back, obviously. So we have, as a right, as an importer, we can do a destruction and claim the duty back. And you just have to arrange that with CBSA, obviously a third party to assist you with that as well. And they will view the destruction of those goods, and then that allows the importer to claim the duty back through drawback.
Okay, that's very interesting. So obviously there's some additional documentation required to do a drawback in that scenario, where it's not just that it's being re-exported, but maybe it's being destroyed because it's expired, or you know, if it's being sent back because it failed to meet you know, some kind of standard, or it failed to meet one of the conditions of acceptance or something like that. So will they actually do inspections in some cases, or is it just a documentary requirement?
Well, for sure they will. They'll come for the obsolete destruction. They will physically be on site to view that.
Okay. So they'll make sure it got destroyed before allowing the drawback. Okay. Good to know.
Yes. Yes. But when we do the other drawbacks, when we're doing, like Sebastian mentioned, the same condition or the further manufactured goods, when we're doing those, we have to have very detailed documentation. So obviously we have to have all of the import records. We have to have all of the export records. We have to prove that those goods were exported. So whether we have the country, if it's going to the US, we need the US customs entry, as well as bills of lading to identify that goods definitely left the country. And then customs will, we file all of that. Customs will definitely spot check that and look at that information and ask for samples for sure.
Okay, that's very interesting. I mean, this sounds like a missed opportunity for many importers. Maybe, you know, after something comes across and they claim, you know, they record their duty and they, everything's sort of settled, maybe they lose track of what happens to the goods next. And sounds like in some cases it might be eligible for the drawback.
Absolutely. And I think what used to happen, importers, I think, used to do a little bit, perhaps more drawback. People just found them time consuming, as well as there was a legislation change for goods going into the US. A lot of those were duty free and you could only claim the lesser of. So there was no drawback. So a lot of, with that change in that legislation and just the tediousness and the timely concerns of preparing these drawbacks, a lot of importers just haven't bothered.
I see. Well, I guess that's where we can be of assistance.
Absolutely. Yes.
Sebastian and Maureen, a lot of great information today. I want to thank you for taking the time to share it with us.
Yeah, our pleasure. Yeah, thank you so much.
And if any of the listeners would like to find out more about any of the issues we talked about today, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
They could email us directly. Do you want me to give you our email address?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So it's maureen.gilfoy@ryan.com. And then Sebastian.
Sebastian is sebastian.grozdziewicz@ryan.com.
You might want to spell that last name for us, Sebastian.
Sure can. So first name is sebastian.grozdziewicz@ryan.com.
And for those listening, there are three Z's in that last name.
There are three Z's in rhymes, right?
That's right. A great, great insight, both of you. And I guess for the record, I would like to say that CARM stands for CBSA, Assessment and Revenue Management.
So thank you, Jim.
There's an acronym within an acronym. You got to love it. Only the CBSA would come up with something like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But once again, great information today. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
That's it for this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. Let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to events@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.